We're on page 1056. We finished last time about the interest. We're four lines in the end of the page. Pasuk Chav Beis. Okay, there's a... Before we start... Did I press this one? Did I press... I don't know, huh?
That's impossible.
Mm-hmm. No, I was supposed to press. I don't think I did, and then it went off.
No, yeah.
That's Moshe. In the kitchen. I think. Moshe!
Oh.
What's the passcode?
No, one second. Just... Okay, we're on page 1056, four lines from the end of the page, Parakhov Gimel, Pasuk Chav Beis. The Torah begins now talking about the concept of Nedarim, of vows. Now, vows is a very interesting thing. It could work a number of ways. Number one, a neder means I can forbid something that the Torah permits me to do. Or, neder could also mean, I donate money to tzedakah, I donate according to the Beis HaMikdash. Basically, it can mean either something that I'm not obligated to do, and I want to do it anyway, so I make a neder, which is a vow. Or, it's possible to make what's called a shvu, also in a way that I forbid something the Torah says I could eat. Like a person is allowed to eat meat, the person can make a neder or a shvu that he's not going to eat meat. So, there are different ways of doing this. But here the Pasuk is speaking primarily about korbanos. If a person makes a neder, a promise to bring a korban to the Beis HaMikdash, so he says like this, Kisida neder l'Hashem l'kecha, when you make a vow to Hashem l'kecha, l'isa'ach l'shalmi, you're not allowed to delay it. And the Gemara learns out from different psukim that you have to bring it within three yomim tevim, within three holidays, you need to bring a carbon. If a person said, I'm going to bring a carbon to the Beis HaMikdash, they have three chagim to bring it. They have to bring it within the three chagim.
Every chagim should bring it, or you have interval?
No. Let's say a person makes a vow before Pesach.
Yeah.
I'm going to bring a carbon to the Beis HaMikdash. Not a chi of carbon. A carbon. So he has Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkot. He has to bring it by Sukkot. If he brings it after Sukkot, he's transgressing this negative mitzvah of not delaying it. But there's one more thing I need to explain. There's what's called neder, and there's called nedava. By a korban, it keeps going on to, then it says selected network, and it says cancel, and then I press cancel, and it goes back on.
You probably don't have a deception.
Always you have to go through Pesach?
No.
It's good.
Three Yom Tov. Okay. So there's what's called Neder or Nedava. And there's an interesting halacha difference between Neder and Nedava. Neder is when a person says, I promise to bring a korban. Nedava, the Gemara says, is when I say, I'm going to bring this korban.
A specific
animal. Which is an interesting halacha. What happens if a person, he goes out to his flock and he sees an animal and he likes it, says, you know what? I'm making a neder to bring this korban to the base, this animal to Beis HaMikdash. And then the animal dies, I don't have to bring another one. But if a guy says, I promise to bring a korban, and he's schlepping his animal down the street to the Beis HaMikdash, and right before he gets to the Beis HaMikdash, the animal dies, he has to bring another one anyway. Because neder, he didn't say this animal. He says, I have to bring a korban. So, he still didn't bring a korban. Here he's saying, I have to bring korban's behemoth zoo. If he says this korban, then if the animal's not alive anymore, he doesn't have to bring it. The animal gets a mum, whatever the situation is. And it says, now the Mefarshim says, what's the difference, what's the connection between before we were talking about neshech, ribis, interest, last week, and now it speaks about a neder. What's the difference? So he says an interesting thing. The Mefarshim explain, just like by, the Gemara says about Ribis, it's like you deny Kefir Balakei Yisrael. So the same thing, when a person brings a neder, it should not be with an animal that you got from interest, from Ribis. If you got, let's say, a guy made $1,000, interest profit. Yeah, without Heter Isk, without all the things we learned last week. And then he takes his $1,000 to bring a carpenter and says, don't bring it to me. You see, the nether has to be in a way that you didn't take interest from it.
If you make money, what's different with interest?
You weren't there last week.
No, I wasn't.
I know.
That's the reason I asked
questions. I'm saying if you take, you're not allowed to take interest.
Yes.
It's forbidden. Unless you make Heter Isk, you know, there are ways to go around.
I know.
But if you, the money that you take with in, as interest, Torah says, I don't want you to take that tray for money.
Oh, tray for money.
Not kosher money, because you weren't allowed to take it. I don't want you to take it and bring a sacrifice to the Beit HaMikdash with that.
That's true.
Tray I don't money. Want it. Okay. Now, it says like this. The Mefarshim explain, it says, okay, we didn't finish the pasuk. Ki darish yidrashenu Hashem alakech me'imach. Because God will already ask it from you. In other words, if you don't bring it on time, Hashem's going to ask it from you. And if you don't bring it, you're going to have a sin. It's going to be a sin if you don't bring it. Okay? Now, the Mefarshim explained, what's this double lashon of Dorish Yidrashenu? Dorish Yidrashenu, what's the double expression? So he explained like this. Chazal say, now, anytime you do a mitzvah, you create a malach. You create an angel. So he says, this malach is basically called on the name of the mitzvah that you do. And he brings a proof from Shimshon, when the malach came to Shimshon's mother and said, you're going to have a son, you know, it's a haftarah of Nosei. So when she asked the malach, what's your name? He said to her, why are you asking my name? Vuhu Peli. That's what he says. And the Mefarshim explained that why is he called Peli? Because when it speaks about making a neder, the Torah says, Ish ki yafli lindor neder. So when you make a neder, even Nazir is also neder, because she said Shimshon is going to be a Nazir, and that's the whole story. So therefore the Malach's name was Peli, from the word Hafla, which is Ishkiyafli Linda Nether, if a person will make a nether. So it says like this. So if a person promises a carbon to the Beis HaMikdash, so he's already creating the malach. But the malach needs to grow. So when you delay the malach, you delay the carbon, so you're creating a sick angel. It's not going to be a healthy angel because you didn't bring it yet. You didn't finish the carbon. And because you didn't bring the carbon, it says, don't, le'sa'ache le'shalmei. It says, le'shalmei also means to complete the malach. Because until you finish bringing the carbon, you didn't finish the mitzvah yet. So you're creating a sick malach that's not going to have to be healthy. Okay, not only that, it says like this. What's the double expression? Darishi d'rashen, the double expression. So some of Farshim learn like this. Because sometimes if a person is a prominent person, okay, and people look up to him. If he makes a neder, makes a pledge and doesn't pay it up, so everybody else says, so why should I pay the pledge? So it's like he's causing other people to sin also. And that's the double expression, Dorish Yidrashenu. Dorish from yourself, that you're not keeping the mitzvah properly, and Yidrashenu because you're causing other people to sin. So therefore Hashem is going to be upset with you. Okay, so then it says like this, V'chi sech dal linder, and when you stop making the vow, it says, L'yia b'chochet, there's nothing wrong with it. In other words, the Torah says like this, don't think that if I make nedarim and then I stop, it's a sin. Hashem says, no. The sin is only if you make a pledge and you don't keep it. You make the vow and you don't keep it. But if a person, kisach the linder, in other words, like this, even though l'cha'eda, a person that makes this pledge of a korban, he's talking about, he said korbanis, right? A guy pledges to bring korbanis. The Torah says you have to bring it. And then Torah says it's better, and this is an interesting thing, and this is what the pasuk is teaching, which is simple logic of halacha. It's better not to pledge than to pledge and not to give it. That's what the Torah says. It's better not to pledge than to make a pledge of a carbon, than to pledge a carbon and not bring it.
Rabbi, if somebody make a neder, meanwhile he lose the power, he cannot do that. What's his neder going?
He shouldn't make a neder.
No, he doesn't. At that time she can do that. After that she cannot do that.
Let's say if he goes broke.
Your bankruptcy, like.
He has to pay when he has money.
So this not this time he cannot pay. It should be 2 and 3 chagim do it. He cannot do that.
He says over here interesting thing. I'm going to give tzedakah because I'm certain God's going to give me the money. I don't have the money. I'm certain God's going to give me the money. So he says if he thinks that way, had amamet shenaisin is not tzedakah. It's only a loan to God. God's going to pay back the loan.
Yeah.
But he said that's not tzedakah. Tzedakah is when you give your money. That's somebody else's money. So he says you have to... he quotes the part in Shlomo, which basically... It's better not to make... it's better not to make a neder than to make a neder. And the Torah says clearly, it won't be a problem. Don't think that... it's a good thing to make a neder because then it forces you to do it. Some people like to make a neder because then it forces them to do it. The Torah says it's not true. Don't make the neder. It's not a sin. And it's not a good thing to do. Okay? It's better not to make a vow at all than to make a vow that you're going to have to pay it back. Okay? And he says, because the Ramban explains, it's not a sin because you're not obligated to do it anyway. So you don't do it, you don't do it.
When we say bilin neder, it's not kavur, huh?
That's why you say bilin neder. No, that doesn't mean you don't have to pay it. People think of it, bilin neder.
We say
bilin neder. It's interesting, in our Mishaber, it says in the Siddur, bilin neder, bavoshitim bilin neder. Even by Yisker, and the Yom Tov, when you do Yisker, it also says in our text, in the Yisker, shayitim bilin neder tzedakah. Because it says in Halacha, the primary thing of Yizkor is the tzedakah that you give at the time of Yizkor. But nevertheless, we say Bli Neder. Bli Neder doesn't mean in a way that I don't have to give it. You have to give it, but it doesn't have a din of a neder that Dorosh Yidrashen Hashem.
So if you don't do it, it's okay?
No.
Why you say Bli Neder? You say you can't...
Bli Neder, that I shouldn't have the sin of a vow, but you're still a debt you have to pay. If I owe you money, I have to pay it?
Yeah.
I have to pay it?
Yeah.
Okay. If a person, but it's not a vow that I have to you. If I don't pay it, I'm not paying you back, but I don't get the sin of going against the vow that I made. Correct? If a person pledges money to tzedakah and doesn't say bli neder and he doesn't pay it, then he's getting a sin, both things. He's made a vow that he's not keeping. When you say bli neder, you still have an obligation to give it. But you don't have the second sin that if you don't pay it on time, that you get an aveda.
So that's, I'm sorry, the rabbi, the most important about the
Yisker?
No, Yisker is that you pay it right away?
No, the most important thing is the tzedakah, it says in Halacha, believe it or not, that the most important part of Yisker is the tzedakah that you pledged at the time of Yisker. And you have to pay it. When they pay it, pay it. By a sacrifice, you have up to 3 Chagim to pay it. Okay, next. The next pasuk is a very interesting pasuk. Meitzes v'secha tishmer v'asisa. Simply, this sounds like just a positive continuation of this mitzvah. Meitzes shall observe and carry out what emerges from your lips. Kasher nadarta l'Hashem l'kechon nadava. Just like when you vowed a voluntary gift to Hashem. What you spoke in your mouth. So simply, the Torah says, like Rashi says, Rashi says the simple meaning of this is, the Torah says, if you don't pay it, you transgress a negative mitzvah. Now the Torah gives it a positive mitzvah also. That if you don't pay it, you're also transgressing a positive mitzvah. Because there's a negative mitzvah, don't not keep your vow, and there's a positive mitzvah to keep your vow. That's the simple meaning of these two psukim. One's a negative, if you make a vow, you have to pay it, for a karban, or tzedakah, whatever it may be, and you get a positive sin also. But the Aruch Chaim HaKadosh explains a very interesting concept of this pasuk. He says, "Bechlau." Of course it means a simple, a vow and all that. But he says, what comes out of your mouth, you should guard it. You should be careful what comes out of your mouth. Like in all the Lashon Hara books, it says, people are very careful, kashrut, yeah, what goes into the mouth. They say, why aren't they as careful what comes out of the mouth? People are very careful in kosher, but they're not, that what goes in the mouth, but they're not careful what goes out of the mouth. So the pasuk says, meitzus sitzachat tishmer. That's the simple meaning, the Aruch Chaim HaKadosh and others explain. But the Mefarshim explain an interesting concept. This is not only about vows, by the way. This is not only about vows. The Torah is speaking, b'chlau, when a person says they're going to do something, they should do it. Right. Not in Aveda. No, I'm saying, b'chlau, there is a concept called an Aloha Meitzah Sasechet Tishmer. Like if I tell you I'm going to do something for you, the Torah says, Meitzah Sasechet Tishmer, you have to do it. There's a positive mitzvah to do it. A person says he's going to, whatever it does, Shchunor gives a lot of different examples of a person says, I'm going to do something, they should do it.
Keep promise. Yeah,
yeah, and not only that, they say in business, by the way, also a very interesting thing, the Mefarshim, Halacha, but even the Mefarshim of the Chumash explain that Meitzah Sasechet Tishmer is even in business. I'll give you an example. There's a din. If I sell this to you, okay? Now, tangible items, according to bottom line halacha, is not acquired with money. That means, if I sell you this for $10, and you give me the $10, but you don't pick up the object yet, technically, halachically, you did not acquire the object. It's not yours yet. Even though you gave me the money, but money doesn't acquire it. Money acquires land, things that are not movable. Gemara says movable items are not acquired with money. You have to pick it up, or if it's an animal, you have to pull it. You're not acquired by money. So technically, if I sell you this for $10, and you didn't pick it up yet, still in the store, you paid me the $10. And then I say, you know what? Change my mind. I don't want to sell it to you. So the Gemara says, Mishnah, but Matthias says like this. You go to Beis Din. Technically, I could change my mind. Legally, I could change my mind because you didn't acquire it yet. Until you didn't acquire it, I could change my mind. Right? Legally, it's not yours. If you picked it up already, then I can't change my mind. I'll give you an example. Two people walk in the store and there's one object left, yeah? And the price is $10. So you say, okay, so you give me the $10. And this guy says to me, I'll give you $20. So if you acquired it already, it's too late. But now I say, 1 minute, I'm not selling it to you. Because you didn't acquire, you just gave me the money. Money doesn't acquire these things. Yeah? So what happens if I say to the guy, you know what, I'm not selling it, I'm selling it to this other guy. I have to give you $10 back, but I'm going to sell it to the guy for $20. Legally, I could do it. But the Gemara says a very sharp expression. You go to Beis Din, and you mekabel what's called Mishapara. This is it's a short. What Misha Parah? Beis Din curses the guy, like me, if I would be, in my case, I would be cursed by Beis Din, that Misha Parah. Thank you. Midard Hamabel, or Midard Hafloga, the same God, it says, who punished the door of the flood, the door of the Babylonian, the tower over there, should punish, it's a curse, Mama Beis Din curses you. Should punish a guy who doesn't keep his words.
This is very strange, you know that?
No, it's very powerful. 1 minute, it's not strange.
Yeah?
The Gemara says a mission by Mitzvah. A person, because I said I'm going to sell it to you. So the Gemara says that it's only if the guy gave money. If I just said I'm going to sell it to you and no money, with nothing happened, I don't get the Misha Pada. The Gemara says it's also wrong. If I made up I'm going to sell it to you, ideally I should sell it to you. That's what you said, I'm going to sell it to you.
Why they're against that halacha? Halacha, they say that's okay. They're against halacha.
You could be what's called a menuvel b'shus ha-tayra, the Gemara says. You could be a despicable person, but you're doing everything right.
So if you keep the halacha...
So the Gemara says, legally,
that's good.
There's nothing I could do. Why you didn't acquire. You can't do anything about it. You didn't acquire it. But the Torah says, Hashem, Beis Din, is going to curse you for not keeping the words that you promised. And based on this, Paz Meitzv Sasechat Tishma. The Gemara says, even if you didn't take the money, but then you don't get cursed. If I just make up with you, I'm going to sell it to you. And then...
You didn't change the money?
The Gemara tells a story, by the way. There was a Jew, davening Shemana Esrei, Damida, and a guy came over to him to do a business deal. And the guy offered him a price for something that he was selling. But the Jew couldn't answer because he was in the middle of the Amida. So the guy thought the Jew, he was quiet because he didn't accept the deal. So he offered more money. He was still quiet, offered more money. The Jew finished the Amida. And he says to the guy, this is what's called a mensch. He says to the guy, I'm sorry I couldn't speak in the middle, but I'm giving it to you for the first amount that you said. He said, because when you said the amount, granted I couldn't talk, I was in the middle of prayer, but in my mind I accepted it. As he said, David Emes Bulvovoy. In his mind, he accepted it. So even though halachically, he would not be at all wrong to take the higher price. The guy offered it, he didn't say anything, you know. Halachically, nothing wrong. But because he said, in my mind, I thought. That's Lefnei Meshuras HaDin. But, and this is a very important thing in business. Years ago, people did business like this. You said that you made a deal with somebody verbally.
That's it, finished.
That was it. It was done deal.
Signed contract.
Somebody came and more money, nothing. That's the kind of Meshuras HaSachat Tishmar. This is Bechlal. In Shulchan it says, it doesn't only mean by vows, it means you say something, you keep it. Besides what the Aruch Chaim says, what comes out of your mouth, you should guard and protect and make sure it's properly. But
for real estate, Rabbi, it's different.
No, real estate, if you give money, you acquire it.
No, but let's say you say, I give you, like, let's say, for instance, 20% of this deal that I'm getting.
No.
And later on, let's say he changes his mind and wants to give less percentage or whatever.
Once the deal is done, the deal is done.
No, there's no money exchanged. He just says verbally. That I'm getting a deal.
The same thing would apply as far as this goes. I'm not talking about legally. Legally, what I tell you doesn't mean anything. Unless if we make a kinyan or, you know, make a contract. Or we do a time by Kenyan.
Because real estate, you said, is not tangible.
No. What I'm saying is, real estate, if I give you money, I acquire it. I can't change my mind anymore. I'm not talking about the percent, I'm just saying, if I want to sell you this chumash for $20, $20 is not going to acquire it to you. You have to pick it up. But if I tell you I'm selling you a piece of land for $20 and you give me the $20, you acquire the land.
You cannot change
it. Even if the land is worth much more than $20, you still acquire the land. Okay, that's the difference. But here we're speaking, even in business, it says you promise somebody you're going to do something for them, you have to do it. And that's the proper thing of a Jew. Now, he says, even if you didn't take money from him, you make up verbally with the thing, that's the way it's supposed to be.
Yeah. In Iran, it was like this long time ago.
Here in America, it was also like this at one time.
Yeah? They say war, they keep it a long time ago. My dad.
Not nowadays.
They say one war, they keep it. Rabbi, but taught also, you write taught neder or not?
No, Abidin is not a neder, but Shulchan Aruch says, Sadin Shulchan Aruch, the Rama says, based on the pasuk Dover Emes Belvovo, so in Shulchan Aruch that if a person in thought, mentally, made up a pledge, even though you're not obligated to do it, because you didn't say it, but the proper thing to do is to pay it. That's the Sazen Shchunar. Again, it's not a chiyuv to pay it, because you didn't say it. That's why the nether has to be Meitzah Sasecha Tishmer. That's what it has to be. That's also enough. Meitzah Sasecha Tishmer, the nether has to be. And it also works another way. Your mind and mouth have to be the same thing also. What happens if a person in mind said, I'm going to give $100. And by mistake, he said $1,000. But it was a mistake. In his mind, he really wanted to say $100. Then I'll pay, then he only gives $100.
Mind is more than it.
No, because the meyach and the peh have to be shava when it comes to vows. No, a person sometimes can make a mistake. He meant to say 100, and by mistake he said 1,000. But if he pledges 1,000, then I'll pay, then he has to give it. Huh? No, if he pledged 1,000, he has to give 1,000. But if he pledged 100, he has to give 100. Okay, next. Okay, Kisave Becher Meriach. This is another interesting din. This is a din that a workman in a field has a right to eat. What? Then they shouldn't say, I will do it. They should say, I will try to do it. I'll be a...
When you say, be neither, okay, you don't have a vowel on your head. But no.
A person. That's what Shulchan Aruch says. This is a din Shulchan Aruch. The Altar brings this down. That a person, if they say they're going to do something, they should do it. If you say, I'm going to help you, you could say, you know what, I'm going to see if I'm able to help you. I'll try to help you. But a person should not say, I'll try to help you. I mean, I'll help you if you're not planning to do it. It's what the Americans call, I'll try. I'll never forget it. Remendel Futterfass, his Chassidish used to come to L.A. every year. So he wanted me to do something for him. So I said to him, I'll try. In Yiddish, so I said to him, I'll try. He says to me, oh, the American bluff. He says to me in Yiddish. So I said in Yiddish, he said to me, oh, the American bluff. You want to be a nice person, so you don't want to say, go somewhere. So you say, I'll try. What you really mean is, I'm not planning to do it. I'm not even thinking about doing it. But I need to be a nice guy, so you'll say, I'll try. It says the American bluff.
Yeah.
No, he says, by Yidin, you don't do that. You'll do it. I'll try. You have no choice. Anytime you ask somebody to do something, they say, I'll try. What does that mean? It's a nice way of saying no. That's what it is.
I think about
it. I think. You don't even think about it. I'll try. You know, that's what he told me. He screamed it to me. He said, why, it's American bluff. Okay, there's a din like this. When you work in the field, the Torah says, while you're working, you can eat as much as you want. But you can't take anything home.
Take it in the pocket.
Take it in the pocket. That's what it says. And there's two din, and we'll see the difference between the two. And Rashi says clearly, the pasuk says like this, if you will come into the vineyard of your fellow, you can eat as much grapes as you want, but you can't put any into your vessel to take home. No, you're only allowed to eat while you're working. And need to see the next pasuk. If you come into the standing grain, meaning a field of your friend, and you may pluck ears with your hand, but you can, which again is the same thing. It means that you can't take anything home.
If you work in a restaurant also, you can't do that?
The question is, it's a whole a halachic question, by the way, if it's not so simple. You can eat, it has to be only a certain time when it's growing. It says, Shapela Kosmendava, not everybody, only a worker. And it says, also, only when there's certain type of grains happening. It's not, and he says even a worker is allowed to eat more than his salary.
Let's
say he gets $10 an hour, the guy's working in the field, he gets $10 an hour, he can eat $20 worth of fruit in an hour. You know, it's a very interesting thing. There's a din, when they used to do causes dam. Causes dam, they don't do it anymore. Bloodletting. They used to, it's healing. They used to take out blood from the person. Gemara talks about it. Gemara says a whole thing about it. There's a lot of dinim. Huh?
Zaru. They call it Zaru.
No.
With
yeah, they used to put leeches on, but they used to do bloodletting with the needles and stuff. But it would make a person very weak.
Yeah.
So a person would need to drink wine and different things like this. So it says in Gemara, it's interesting then. There's illegal stealing, by the way. If you had bloodletting and you're too poor to afford to buy wine or whatever, you'd be allowed to go out to wine merchants. You know, they would give you samples to taste the wine to see if you want to buy it. So it says in Shchunach, in that case, you're allowed to go to a lot of different merchants for samples. Because Mar says it's dangerous. If you take blood and you don't eat, this could be dangerous. So wine was the big thing they used to drink after bloodletting. So Mar says, even though you're not normally allowed to do this, normally, let's say a store is giving out samples. And you know that the only reason they're giving out samples is because they want you to buy it. So nowadays it's different because nowadays, you know, go into the stores, you see they're all giving out these samples. They're all treif anyway. All this treif stuff. So they know, l'chatchil, you're not planning to buy it. I mean, but years ago, when they gave out samples, they push it, wine tasting, push it for people to buy it. And your intention is not to buy it at all. But in that case, a chum allowed you to do it. So you're allowed to eat. And the question, why is the pasuk saying two different dinim? One's about a vineyard, and one is about grain. So it's an interesting thing. The difference between grapes and grain is one is necessity and one is luxury. So wine represents
luxury.
You know, the geschmack, it tastes good. And grain represents the necessities. So the pasuk is saying both things. Whether it's, in fact, the Mefarshim ask, one second, it says,
grain cannot eat the raw.
He can only, what?
Grain cannot
eat. Like he says, the worker is only allowed to eat when he puts the food into the kelim of the balabas, and then he's allowed to take some of the food for himself. But he says, a worker that doesn't eat what he's not supposed to eat, or he eats from the grain still connected to the ground, he says it's a negative commandment. He's stealing.
Shit.
It's mamish stealing. So the Torah allows under certain circumstances. But the Torah is speaking whether it's things of necessity or things which are luxury. In either way, the Torah says you have to allow the boss is a mitzvah on the boss. Hates it. You have to allow the workers to eat. It's similar. It's a little bit different. Later on, there's a pasuk that says, that when an ox is plowing a field, you're not allowed to muzzle it. Because then he would eat. So it's a cruelty to animals. So it says that when the shore is not plowing, the shore is threshing. What they used to do is, nowadays it's all machine, but when they harvested the stuff, so you have the wheat and then you have the hard kernel out, the hard cover outside. So they put it in a barn, and they would bring an ox, a bunch of oxen, to trample it, and it would loosen up the shell, and then they threw it up into the wind, which was called miruach, winnowing. These are all part of the lamentas, melachas, and Shabbos. And then the grain would come down, the loose stuff would go fly away. So it says, when an ox is working in grain, you're not allowed to muzzle the ox. You have to let him eat while he's working. So it's definitely the din by a person. But a person is different that the person is allowed to eat, but he cannot take anything home. Can't take anything for anything for anybody else. Okay, next let's go about the dinim of marriage. This coming up, psukim, all the dinim of marriage, how to acquire a wife and how to divorce a wife, all these dinim, the next few psukim. Ki kach ish isho bal, perch of dalet. If a man marries a woman, and he marries her, I need to read a few psukim, and then we're not going to obviously finish it today, but Ki yigach ishi shovalov, a man will take a lady and live with her. V'ayim lay simsuchem be'enov, she won't find favor in his eyes. Ki matza ba'er v'zdover, he found something of nakedness, of immorality in her. V'chasev la sefer krisis, he writes her a sefer krisis, means a book of separation, which is basically the concept of a get. V'nasem be'yodah, he sends her out, gives it in her hand, v'shulchum ibeis, and he sends her out. Then she leaves and she marries somebody else. And the second marriage hates her, so she cannot go back to the first husband. Okay? If you look at the simple meaning of the pasuk, the Torah is telling us not the dinim of kedushin or the dinim of get, even though all the dinim of kedushin and all the dinim of get we learn out from these psukim, these two psukim. But the Torah is simply, in this paragraph over here, is telling us a din like this. If a man marries a woman, he divorces her. She marries somebody else. The second guy dies or divorces her. The first husband cannot remarry her.
That's true.
No, Torah gives a reason. Achrei Yeshu Tama. She came Tami. Did she live with somebody else? In marriage, by the way. If she committed adultery with somebody else, she can go back to the first husband.
She can't go
there? Huh? What?
If
a man divorced his wife,
yeah,
and then the woman didn't marry somebody, she was falling around with somebody else,
yeah,
the husband's allowed to remarry her, unless if he's a kohen. But if she married somebody else and got divorced, but the second husband died, she cannot go back to the first husband.
That is more legal than the other one.
Huh?
It's more legal than the other one, that going fooling around, then they can go good together. It's not good.
Now, it's interesting because if you look at the pasuk, first it talks about the laws of gittin, and then it says she marries somebody else. That's why in the order of gemaras, by the way, gittin comes before kedushin. In the order of shas, you would think kedushin should be first and then gittin. But here, gittin goes first, based on the pasuk, because the Torah says a man takes a woman which doesn't say anything, basically divorces her, and then he marries her. Now, there's three opinions in the Mishnah at the end of Gittin why a man is allowed to divorce his wife. One opinion says, Beishamai says, because it says matza ba'ervas davar. That means only if she was fooling around, having affairs or things like that, then he has a mitzvah to divorce her. According to Beishamai, that's the only reason somebody could divorce his wife. Beis Hillel says, "I feel like gdicha tafshila. Even if she burnt his food, has a right to divorce him."
Tough.
By the way, I'm just going to say you'll sleep on it for a week, but next week we'll discuss the in-depth meaning of these three opinions. Unbelievable. And Rabbi Kiva says, "I feel a matza noyman. Even if you found a better wife, you could divorce the first one." As Rabbi Kiva said. Don't tell this to the women today, by the way. But we'll soon see. But the halacha is like none of the above. None of the above. But the Torah says, though, ki yikach ish isha uba'ala. Okay, now, the Mishnah says, and we'll just start this today, because a man acquires the woman, okay, one of three ways. Kesef, shtar, or bia. Meaning money, document, or marital relations. That is the way a man acquires a woman. Now before we go even further, what I want to do now is discuss a little bit the process of marriage according to Torah. The Rambam writes that before Matan Torah, before the Torah was given, the Rambam at the beginning of Hilchos Ishus writes, before Matan Torah, a guy walked in the street, liked the woman, said, okay, you're mine, it's a girl. Didn't like her, said goodbye, you're not mine. That was it. Before Matan Torah. After the Torah was given, the whole thing changed. There has to be, ki yikach ish isha, like the pasuk says, the man takes the woman, by the way, which is a very interesting din. According to halacha, the wife does not take the husband. The man takes the wife. Okay? And it says ki yikach. So how do you take? So the Gemara says it could be one of three ways. But before that, in the time of the Gemara, in the time of the Gemara, we learned this in the Gemara Shir a lot, but in the time of the Gemara, there's two parts of a marriage. There's Kiddushin and Nisuin. There's the Kiddushin, with the, or Edison, as it's called, and then there's the Nisuin, the actual marriage. In the time of the Gemara, the way it worked like this. A man came over to a woman, this had to be willingly. We learn out from Rivka, when they said about the Shidduch with Eliezer, so Rivka, they said, let's ask the girl, and the girl said, I'm going. Meaning the Kiddushin has to be willingly. So if a boy, man, comes over to a woman, gives her a ring in front of two witnesses, that's called Kiddushin. So the woman becomes his. What does it mean the woman becomes his? For everybody in the world, she is a married woman. Except the man cannot live with her until they have nisuin, until they go to chuppah. In the time of the Gemara, it was 12 months apart for a psula. For a first-time girl married, for a virgin psula, they did kedushin, and a year later, they had the marriage.
Why
they gave a year? Because they didn't have bridal stores, and they didn't have caterers, and they didn't have a house ready. Yeah. It took a year to get
everything
apartment, everything. Everything was made from scratch. So that was what was done in those days. Which means like this. From the time of Kedushin on, if they wanted a split, they needed a get. She was mamish an eishes ish. Full-fledged married woman. Except she can't live with her husband yet because they're not married. They would need a get. They would need everything. 12 months later, they had the chuppah. Chuppah is, you know, yichud, whatever it is, all that stuff. And then the husband and wife were now allowed to live with each other. Today, because of, you know, you know it's going to be problems this. So today, we do the Kedushin and the Nisuin under the Chuppah at the same time. So you have first the Birchus Edison, as it's called, you know, they make a brach and then the Chosin gives the ring and says, Ariat Mekadeshusli. Then they read the Ketubah and then they have the Sheva Brachot. Yeah? The Sheva Brachot, that's the Nisuin. You know what's interesting? You know why they read the Chuppah, the Ketubah under the Chuppah? There's really no purpose reading Ksubah. Ksubah is a financial document between a husband and wife.
Right. Huh? Right.
Why they're reading it? Okay. To make a separation between part one and part two. The first part is Edison. Second part is Nisuin. In order to separate the two, so they read the Ksubah. That's mamish the reason why they read the Ksubah. That's it, the only reason. Because it's really, it's a private financial document between husband and wife. What's it have to do with reading under the Ksubah? Yeah. Under the Chuppah. By the way, years ago, the reading the Ksubah was like a non-kibud. It was like, nobody wanted it. The shamas of the shul did it. Today it's a big kibud because if you're not a scholar, you don't know how to read it. It's Aramaic without vowels, so it's a big, it's a big kibud. Today, reading this, years ago in Europe, it was like a nothing to read the Ksubah. But anyway, so there are two parts to the Kedushin. Okay, Mr. Shem, next week we'll go into this much more. Yeah.